coming. Today, I would like to start and have you consider three things. How Encerra functions as an integral part of Sitka's fishing community. Two, the importance of the fishing industry to Sitka's economy. And finally, that Sitka's fishing industry, processors, fishermen, sport charter, and aquaculture is a powerhouse, the economic engine that drives Sitka. First and foremost, this is a story about commercial fishermen, both the ordinary, hardworking fishermen and visionary fishermen. When I say this, I am including women. Linda Bankin, Carol Nichols, Deborah Lyons, and others. In fact, those women could probably take any guy sitting in here. If you want to talk about the semantics of the term fisherman, we can do that at the end. I count myself as very fortunate to have chosen a career where I ended up working for fishermen. Fishermen are independent, entrepreneurial, and believe they don't answer to anybody. I mean anybody. They are irreverent and have a large dose of iconoclasm. They say what they think, often unvarnished and always in colorful language. I like to think I reflect their values, although I'll try to be professional today. Economically, Sitka has depended on fish for thousands of years, first in trade and barter, now mostly in a cash economy. And that dependence on salmon, halibut, herring, and other abundant marine resources has not disappointed. Sure, stocks have their ups and downs, but through the sustainable fisheries management and pristine habitat, fish has long been and will continue to be Sitka's foundation. Some of you know I have run 350-mile races in the dead of winter without sleep for days. But I want to tell you, that is nothing compared to the men and women that bring in the catch. These independent friends and neighbors of ours work extremely hard with their hands, backs, and minds, work interminable hours, and work weeks without break and inclement conditions. They are quintessential salt of the earth, and I'm proud to say I work for them, I work with them, and I represent them here today. Here is what the fishing community brings to Sitka's economy. Nearly 2,000 people earn money catching fish or processing fish in Sitka, by far the largest employer. 11% of Sitka's population fishes commercially. Think about it, that's over 1 in 10 fish commercially. We have three major processors in town and a combined payroll in Sitka of $13.5 million. In 2013, they processed 90 million pounds of fish, valued at $72 million. That's to the fishermen, referred to as ex-vessel value. The first wholesale value of this fish is somewhere around $150 million as it goes out the processor's door. And as it swirls around Sitka's economy, it has a total economic output of over $200 million. That's just for 1 year. Another fishing segment not included in these stats is the sport charter industry, with a total gross sales of about $25 million. Encerra salmon production contributed $20 million in salmon value last year. When you put all this together, no other industry, even all government sectors combined, come close. Sitka benefits in other ways. The city received $1.25 million in raw fish tax last year. This is a business tax on fish that Sitka Sound, SPC, and Silver Bay pay to the state of Alaska from the fish they buy from fishermen. Given the record year in 2013, Sitka will likely receive close to $1.5 million in 2014. That will be a record, as 2011 was a record, but this is even larger than that. Again, this tax money comes back to the city of Sitka and contributes significantly to funding local government. The three processors also contribute to local government through property tax. In fact, two of the processors are the top 1 and 2 highest property taxpayers in the city and borough. The sport charter businesses generate another $1 million in taxes. INSRA produced a portion of the salmon landed in Sitka, Petersburg, and elsewhere in Southeast last year. As mentioned, the value to the fishermen was $20 million. Here is what you probably didn't know. Commercial fishermen pay for the entire program through a 3% tax they voted to impose on all salmon landed. No public money. Before I start with the slides, I want to give you one message that I hope you will take home from this talk. The money fishermen have put into the program through the 3% enhancement tax since inception, roughly $33 million, has shown a return on investment of just under $240 million. That's over 7 to 1. Now, no individual fisherman is getting rich on this. I don't want you to think that. There are roughly 1,000 hand trawlers, but the permit holders that focus their, you know, much of their time in the season are the power trawlers, and there's just under 1,000 of those, seiners, 380 of those, and gillnet, about 425. So roughly about 2,000 dedicated fishermen fishing each summer on salmon. So that money, of course, gets spread among them. And I thought it was important not to have some misconception. $20 million is a lot of money, but when you think of it spread out, it's very helpful, but it's not enough to pay all the bills. Wild stocks is what they really depend on to make their season. So who are we? In the mid-1970s, the state of fisheries was not good. Salmon returns were nearly all-time low, and fishermen wanted to do something about it. Two visionary politicians helped get legislation passed to enable private nonprofit hatchery system. Governor Jay Hammond and Senator Richard Eliason Sr. were two, and INSRA was incorporated in 1978. INSRA is nonprofit, but operates with the lean efficiency and work ethic of a startup business. We aim to be highly efficient, maintain lean budgets, and evaluate success by comparing costs to the value of what we produce in commercial fisheries. For 35 years of operation, we average a contribution of 75% of the fish we produce going to the commercial or the common property fisheries. So how it works and who pays for it. Alaska Hatchery System is unique in the world. Anywhere else in the United States or Canada, state, federal, or provincial tax dollars pay for hatchery programs, but don't show half the impact. And that's giving a lot of credit, half. In Alaska, INSRA and other programs like it are paid for in two principal types of cash flow. 3% tax on the commercially caught salmon, recall, tax fishermen elected to impose on themselves, and two, licensing the harvest rights to a processor for a portion of the returning adults to our programs. There are about 3,000 limited entry permit holders in Southeast Alaska. They nominate and elect 16 of their peers to the board of directors. The board sets policy and determines the programs we develop. The board of directors has appointed a non-gear seat such as municipality, native organizations, subsistence, conservation, sport fish processor, and interested persons, 25 seats in all. Those are my bosses. Got two of them out here in the audience. And what we do, this is the simple part. INSRA produces salmon for common property fisheries. This means salmon for sport, sport charter, subsistence, commercial, and even bears and eagles. Once a salmon fry are released to the ocean, they become the property of the citizens of Alaska. To put Insaraz program in context with wild stock production, about 20% of the catch in Southeast is from enhanced fish, and 80% is from wild spawning populations. The legislative intent was to create new fisheries and to supplement Mother Nature, not replace it. As you know, 2013 was a record year for salmon in Southeast, with an ex-vessel value of $260 million, driven by the record wild pink salmon returns. Even so, enhanced chum, coho, and chinook accounted for $50 million in value last year. So I want to take you on a little tour of our programs. Let's see, I'm going the wrong way. All right. So I want to kind of give you the setting for the area that we operate in and what our programs look like. So pretty evident, northern Southeast is the top half of the Panhandle Archipelago. The southern Southeast is operated out of Ketchikan's sister organization. So our programs are from Petersburg to Skagway, Juneau to Haines. And they're spread out over that region. So Medvija Hatchery here in Sitka, Hidden Falls on the east side of the island, Deer Lake, a major coho production facility down in Southeast Baranof, projects in the Juneau area, and wild stock enhancement programs in the Haines area. How many people have been to Medvija? So most everyone, but not everyone. Every summer we have a salmon bake out there, and we hire the Allen Marine boat to get people out there. We sell, they're only $15 to help pay for the transport, but it's a huge salmon bake. We provide all the fish and the treats out there. So if anybody'd like to see Medvija, that's one way to do it. And of course you can bike or hike out there as well, or take a boat. So our closest facility, Medvija, it produces coho, chum, and chinook salmon. It's it's a major facility in Southeast Alaska. The value that this facility produces, both at Deep Inlet and returns to Medvija, are on the order of $4-$8 million in value a year. So chum production is about 80% of the value we produce each year. It's easy to produce chum salmon. You can produce millions of them. Medvija itself produces about 80 million fry, whereas we look at coho or chinook, those numbers are in the 2 or 3 million range. And they grow rapidly, then they go off to the ocean as a small 2-gram fish, and then are out in the ocean for 2 to 3, sometimes 4 years before they return. As you know, we have facilities out at Deep Inlet where we rear the fish. Most of the fish are put out at Deep Inlet because that's where it's a good location for common property fisheries. Most of the releases at Medvija are done so that those fish returning are used as brood stock to perpetuate the program. Green Lake is a program we added on. It's a Chinook program out at one of the city hydro reservoirs. We started that roughly 15, 16 years ago. And it's a unique program in Alaska where we take Chinook fry hatched at Medvija, we transport them up to Green Lake, the reservoir, put them in the net pens. We feed them from July to October and then bring them back down to Medvija in a specially designed transport tractor trailer and put them in the salt water. They transition physiologically and are able to tolerate salt water in October. We actually do salt water challenges to make sure they're ready for that. And then once that is defined, then they are placed in salt water and We rear them through the winter and they're released each spring. And wild Chinook and all wild salmon tend to come out of fresh water about April and May and go off to the ocean and start their journey. Our newest hatchery is Sawmill Cove Hatchery out at the old mill site. Aerial view here, the round tanks there in a row, those will be for raising coho salmon. This is right now is dedicated to coho salmon only. We are building that program. We're about midway in the building. The facility is designed for 2 million coho smolt, should produce about 200,000 adult coho annually. So right now we just took 1.5 million eggs this past year. We've got two more years of that, and then we'll go to the full complement, take roughly 3 million eggs to get 2 million fry for release. It's so far, we had our second year return this past summer, and it was outstanding. So we're hoping this is gonna be a major coho producer for Sitka Sound. Hidden Falls, this used to be a state facility. It's over on the east side of the island. Most of you here probably walked over there, right? This is like a little city. It's got a hydro plant of its own, 250 kW. It's got its own septic, its own water supply, its own housing. So it's a self-contained unit. You rarely see the staff in town. Most of the staff love it out there, come in rarely. We encourage them to come in, but they really love it out there. It is difficult to keep people for more than 5 years because it is very remote, and about that period of time, people move on or ready to get a town job. But some people have lived their whole life. Not their whole life, but I know one guy that we had out here that now runs the Port Armstrong Hatchery, Ben Contag, who's lived remote for 25 years and raised children, and his wife is there and loves it as well. This facility, we raise chum, again, major production of chum salmon. Here we do about 125 million chum eggs. And those are reared at Takats, and people have heard of, I should pronounce it, Takats is the closest Native Alaska pronunciation of it. And it is a name, and it originated out of cake, is my understanding. We sourced this through John Littlefield, and that's what we've come up with. And so this, we're trying to get Chris trained to pronounce it Takats. But anyway, that's just one of our release sites for chum salmon. And this program has been hugely successful. It's one of the biggest chum salmon adult return sites in the state. It's the Saners have kind of sole access to this. There's no gild netting over there, and it's a huge producer for Saners. Trollers are also allowed to fish over there, although they have, except for one year, have not been able to figure out where the concentrations are and how to catch those. But I know Eric is still working on it.
We know where the concentrations are, but they're, we get corked.
Huh. Okay. It's also a huge coho producer. Hidden Falls produces about 6 million coho. Half of those are raised right on site, and half of those are flown down to Deer Lake, which I'll talk about in a minute. And those programs are together the largest coho program in the state of Alaska. And last year we had about 250,000 coho returned to those facilities. The round ponds are necessary for the freshwater rearing stage of coho and Chinook, and that's what those 36 ponds are. rearing, and they go into those ponds in the spring, and there's the coho and chinook stay for about 16, 17 months and then are released to the ocean. But it's a long time in that fresh water. This is one of my favorite projects. Kind of cut my teeth on this during the investigations back in 1979 and 1980. This developed into a phenomenal program. The fry are flown from Hidden Falls down to this lake. They're either put in the lake or put in net pens. And then you see this waterfall, 320-foot drop from crest to the bottom. Would kill most of the fish if they came over that. So what we had to do was figure out a way to get those fry and smolt at that time from the lake to saltwater. And the way that is done is this smolt trap. Now when the city has to build a big dam, they bring in these huge contractors and with all their machinery. This is a smaller scale, I'll admit, Chris. But what we had to do was pack it in on our backs and move it down from the lake to the stream and carve out this area, which took us 2 years to do, and put in a trap that would filter all the water, has to filter all the water that comes out of that lake, and it's a huge volume, and then leave the smolt intact and healthy so that they can come off the end of this trap, go into that pipeline, come down to saltwater, get counted, put into net pens, and then released to the ocean.
Did you mention that you lived in a treehouse for most of two summers there?
Yes, I did not mention that. But I loved it. And part of why I love that project so much is all the creativity it took to carve out a life down there. We built, in the investigations, we actually built about 8 treehouses. My friend Robert, the potter, we built 8 treehouses throughout northern southeast at various lakes. We built individual weirs that were cruder than that because we were doing experimental design. And each one was unique and took creativity and a lot of hard work. And I loved it. I just really loved it. I feel fortunate that I was able to have that experience. We also do projects up in the Haines area. These are considered kind of small scale enhancement projects where we have created spawning channels. So the water you're looking at there prior to the excavation was just ground. And we dug test pits to see if there was water, how much water. We did test pumping to see if, during the winter at the coldest period, to see if we could still get volume. Once we proved this out, then we carved channels to the main stream so that it had access to a wild system. And then the salmon swim right up into these spawning channels. It creates new spawning habitat, and they're highly productive because they are selected so they have good upwelling water. And it's because it's subsurface, it comes up pure and aerated, and it's groundwater, so it doesn't really get below 4 degrees C or roughly 38, 40 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's a perfect habitat for chum salmon spawners, and we've carved about 5 of these in the Haines area. So this is what they look like after 5 to 10 years, the vegetation grows back in, and then most people that would go by them really wouldn't know it was a spawning channel. They would think it was just part of the stream. We also put incubation boxes on these. Not sure why this doesn't want to advance. So we put incubation boxes, and that's another way to increase the production by taking some of the spawners and taking their eggs and putting them in these boxes. These boxes will have a survival from the egg stage to fry of about 90% to 95%. A natural spawner in these channels, which is ideal conditions, will have about a 25% survival. And then wild spawners, it's anywhere from 0 to 10% is a typical survival from egg to fry. So maybe the battery's dead in here. And I don't have many more. Encirad does a lot of research so that we can understand what our programs are doing. So some of the research we do is monitoring chum fry in Sitka Sound, looking what they consume and what consumes them. Eric actually helped with this. Some of these pictures might be on his boat. We evaluate the wild coho at Salmon Lake, looking at the numbers of fry produced. We tag some of those, and then they are captured in fisheries, plus when they return to the terminal area, so we can understand the exploitation rate of a wild stock coho. Chum timing and migration in Sitka Sound. This is a study done over 10 years ago, but we learned quite a bit about how the salmon enter the sound and how they move in and out of deep inlet on their return to Medviji. And they have an opportunity, unfortunate for them, to get caught a number of times. And so they're running quite a gauntlet because of their migratory path. And the fact that they ever get back to Medviji is amazing, because they're running through trollers that aren't very effective at catching, and then seiners. I probably won't have a job when I get home. So to look at what we did in 2013 quickly, is 20 million in value, which I've already mentioned a couple times. Looking at it by gear, purse seine is the blue line, the top line. Drift gillnet is the red, the lower one, and the troll. The trollers had a record year at Encirad in their catch of chum salmon. They actually caught 460,000 out in Eastern Channel this year. And they also had a record coho year with Encirad fish. So it was an outstanding year for the troll fleet. Cost recovery, we also do, you know, as I mentioned, we have to harvest some fish for our revenue stream. We've got a couple other programs going on that has reduced the amount of cost recovery we have to take. Most of this cost recovery is actually coho and chinook that get through the fisheries, and then when they show up in the terminal area, we have to harvest them, or else they'll just die or stray. And so that's a source of revenue as well. So most of this revenue is actually from coho and chinook. Looking at it by species quickly, Chinook salmon this year won almost $1.5 million. And this is the history, by the way, just you can see sort of the average, where the average line would be in big and small years. So there's quite a bit of variability. You can see that I think now that the final prices are in, this was a record coho year for value for Encirad. And this shows, this is actually from a McDowell study in 2008. And I put it up there primarily for one reason. If this graph was, so this is how Encirad fish were distributed in a period of 5 years between 2003 and 2008. If you looked at this now, because of Silver Bay being in Sitka, that red line that sticks out there, we would have the, Sitka would have the majority share. It's really changed the dynamics of where fish are processed because of Silver Bay. And so that's been beneficial for Sitka. It's brought a lot of revenue here for fishermen, tax revenue, and so forth. So I'm just gonna go through those like that because I don't wanna keep walking out there. So I have a few final points. Encirad has 25 year-round employees or 36 full-time equivalents counting the seasonals. Our budget is about $6.5 million. The sport harvest value is about $2 million annually, consisting mostly of coho and chinook, about 10,000 fish altogether. They have a value system that's calculated different than commercial catch, of course. The total economic impacts of INSRA on 2013, including all direct, indirect, and induced effects with harvesting and processing, was $100 million. Remember, fishermen make this happen. Future programs, Sawmill Cove Hatchery, we're looking at adding on a chum program to that with a release site in Crawfish Inlet. That's in the stages of conceptual, and we'll be dealing with that at the March board meeting. We're also looking at the Gunnett Creek Hatchery in Cake. They recently defaulted, and so INSRA, I'm going out on Friday. We'll be meeting with their mayor and other, the community of Cake, and we're gonna see what we can do to keep that program going. Probably not necessarily at the hatchery, but we have some ideas. That could be potentially huge. If we can pull that off and Crawfish Inlet by, and we know we can do it at the hatchery, but if we can get the permit for Crawfish Inlet, we can add 100 million chum fry release. That's $8 million annually if we can get the permits to do those two different programs. So I wanted to mention that INSRA and the processors are good community members and contribute to Sitka in other ways. To name a few, we give fish and or roe to Fish in the Schools program, Pioneer Home, Senior Center, Sitka Tribe of Alaska, Raven's Way, Dog Point Fish Camp, and the Seafood Festival. INSRA conducts educational presentations and tours for the entire Keat third grade class at Medviji, and we've been doing that for 20 years. We also work closely with the Sitka Sound Science Center. So in closing, I've shown that Sitka is a strong and vibrant fishing community. We and the larger community should celebrate that, because without it, Sitka would not be the Sitka you love. Thank you.